Greg Epstein is the humanist chaplain of Harvard University. You can read the rest of it in here, but he was lead organizer of the New Humanism, which was a spectacular conference by all accounts at the Harvard in April 2007. And he blogs for the Washington Post Newsweek magazine project on faith. Greg Epstein.
Science and reason build hospitals. Religion alone doesn't. But science and reason alone won't come visit you in the hospital. Religion might. Humanism might too. It can and it must. And that is the point that I believe needs to be at the heart of this Enlightenment 2.0, if it's going to hold any water. Science alone doesn't make hospital visits. But scientists can and must if we can also be humanists. Of course, that begs the question what it is that I mean by humanism. And as I was in the limousine being spirited to this wonderfully mysterious conference, thanks to Roger and the Science Network and the Zepps family, I had a chance to meet Darren McMahon, and two of us weren't familiar with each other's work, so we introduced each other and ourselves, and Darren said to me, you know, I think I'm actually one of the few humanists that they've brought in for this thing, and I said, really? Because I was about to say exactly the same thing to you, and I got so excited I was practically ready to invite him to form a caucus. But of course, then I realized that he meant humanism in the other, very important, but the other sense of the word. Darren obviously is a wonderful intellectual historian, not a scientist, therefore a humanist. But I meant, and I want to talk about humanism in the other really crucial sense of the word. Humanism as a, according to the, or at least I'll give you a definition of it based on the American Humanist Association's Humanist Manifesto 3, 2003, humanism as a progressive life stance. Now notice I didn't say religion. I also didn't say philosophy of life or worldview, because I think a humanism that holds water needs to be a little bit more than just how we view the world. It's about how we behave in the world. So humanism as a progressive life stance that, without supernaturalism, affirms our ability and our responsibility to lead ethical lives of personal fulfillment, aspiring to the greater good of humanity. That's humanism, and again, that's what I think needs to be at the heart of this Enlightenment 2.0 if we're going to speak to the world at large and we're going to make an impact for all of the great science and scientific discovery that we've been rightfully celebrating here this week. So I want to talk a little bit about humanism, but I think we need to discuss an issue that's been on the table a lot, and it's been on the table in my work with humanism, and that is, what's the role of atheism in humanism? Because we've been throwing it around a lot, and there's been some conflict because, you know, in my work, I've been trying to point out that, well, that atheism isn't quite enough. But that being said, I also like to take a minute and celebrate atheism. I think that it's an important, it's really important that we understand that this can be a wonderful part of a wonderful life. And, you know, it's funny because I got here and I was thinking, well, maybe this is the time that I should finally unveil this essay that I've been thinking about writing, defending atheism against Sam Harris, which I thought, you know, would be a lot of fun to do, because Sam has done all this great work talking about the importance of responding by making the noises that reasonable people make when in the face of religious dogma. Right, but of course you've also made a really thought-provoking statement most recently that maybe atheism isn't the best word for that. Maybe there aren't words at all that we need to build a way of living in this world that will be more productive than the ways that we've got right now, that dominate the majority of societies like America right now? Well, it's an interesting point, but I do want to disagree there. And I know that you've nuanced the term, by the way, and you've done a good job of that. You've talked to atheist activists with whom you've worked, and you've talked about the fact that there may be a transitional period in your mind where it's okay to use that word, but still, this is an interesting point. Do we use the term atheist? Should we not? I say we should, as part of our identity, part of it. But what we really need to focus on, I would suggest, is humanism, is the heart of the matter. And I know, we're in a room of scientists, so if I were to say that humanism is really the heart of what we're trying to get at with this new enlightenment, then you'd say yes, but it's scientists, right? The heart is just a pump. I know, but we're going to have to behave according to that which we would commonly designate as heart if we're going to build something worthwhile. Metaphors are important. Not the God metaphor for me, but compassion, caring. The universe may not give us enough evidence to believe that these things are objectively true, but we're going to need to behave according to them. So, atheism is an important part of who we can be as enlightenment intellectuals and enlightenment emoters, if you like, but it's something that we're going to need to move down the road with, that we're not going to be able to stay there in that place of denying the gods. And I do, by the way, just for the record, 3 million people viewed this Science Network website the last time we did one of these conferences. So for the record, for all those who are keeping score at home, I do not believe or acknowledge the existence of any god, gods, goddesses, ghouls, ghosts, goblins, supernatural spirits, or any of the like. And I'm also not Daniel Dennett might call a faith in faith head either. I really take tremendous exception to that often quite despicable canard that we can't be good without God. Of course we can be good without God. Of course we can, and it's not acceptable to say that we can't by any stretch of the imagination, not for a nanosecond, however. It's not easy to be good without God. It's not easy to be good with or without God is the point. That's the point. Life is difficult. It's difficult for all of us, no matter who we are, scientists, humanists, religious, non-religious. Life is difficult, and we need to communicate about that and address that. It's not just about whether water is wet. Life is difficult. Every day, we human beings face the danger of injury, of illness, of death. Our relationships fall apart. Our hearts get broken. We deal with this in very real terms. And the mere non-existence or existence of a God doesn't help. I'm interested in thinking with you, because I know that many of us in this room have a lot of wisdom to share on this issue, and that we do share regularly on this issue. So I'm not the one expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm interested in calling us to think clearly, reasonably, and passionately about this question of how do we address the difficult nature of life as an emotional being? We evolved emotions. We wouldn't have been able to solve the evolutionary problems that got in our way constantly over the course of millions, billions of years without powerful emotions that wash over our evolved brains almost every moment of our waking lives. And we need to figure out how to address them, how to deal with them in constructive ways, perhaps not only for our own sake and for the sake of our loved ones and all of humanity, but maybe even for the sake now of this natural world that surrounds us and sustains us. And so what I'm interested in talking about, we put on this conference called The New Humanism. And, there was the complaint that we were reinventing humanism, right? The new humanism. I have to tell you, the new humanism is equally as new as the new atheism. It's every bit as new as the new atheism. Of course, we know that the new atheism isn't really new either, and that's okay. That's in no way an insult against the new atheism, the new humanism, none of it. I mean, Sam is a brilliant thinker, and Richard Dawkins is a brilliant thinker, and Daniel Dennett, etc. And so was Bertrand Russell, and so was Corliss Lamont. These ideas aren't new. Brilliant anti-religious thinkers. I mean, the real trifecta was Freud, Nietzsche, and Marx, wasn't it? So the new humanism isn't new. But I am going to tell you a little bit about it, because it may be a new emphasis on some points that others have made in the past that we need to remember now in the future. It also may be a gathering together of some important points that we don't often see in one place, or that we often overlook because of the culture war that is legitimately going on right now between some of the forces of science and religion. So let's talk about three aspects of the new humanism. First of all, I think we need to be a little bit more diverse as a movement. And I use that word diverse as a catchphrase. I'll give you three points that I'm going to talk about, that we need a movement that's a little bit more diverse, we need a movement that I think is a little more inclusive, and we need a movement that is a little bit more actively inspiring. And I'll talk about what I mean by that. Because again, it's not that we're never diverse and we're never inclusive. What I mean by diverse, first of all, I mean it's unfortunately sometimes it's easy enough to just sort of look around the room at a conference like this one or the other one. If you doubt that humanism or atheism or any of this sort of scientific movement might need to be a little bit more diverse, you just sort of look around, and unfortunately you don't see a lot of what we commonly refer to in the English language as diversity, especially in terms of ethnic diversity. Diversity sometimes of age can be an issue, diversity of culture. We often find that these kinds of conferences in North America are strongly dominated, I suppose you could say, by the Judeo-Christian cultural background. Judeo-Christian is, you know, as is often said, with the heavy emphasis on Christian, right? Because you know, Jewish culture is not a heavy emphasis here, but you do have a few speakers that get up and say that they're Jewish atheists, or as I would call it, a humanistic Jew. Which I am, but not a lot of cultural diversity. What's the importance of that, though, really? I mean, is that really a big issue? Do we need to worry about that? Is something that we should be humanistically guilt-ridden about? I would suggest that it's important to recognize that religion, as has been discussed, is a little bit more as a term than just the belief in a supernatural deity. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to be religious, or that I want to consider myself religious, or that I'm advocating that we consider ourselves religious. It's not that. But let's acknowledge that if we're in dialogue with religion, or if we're debating with religion, or even if we're trying to eliminate religion, that thing that we're talking about in any worthwhile sociological analysis would boil down to a lot more than theistic belief. And what you're dealing with, very often, when you're dealing with this term, you're dealing with what we could refer to as people's culture, people's heritage, people's sense of connection with their family, with their loved ones. We're dealing, I guess, with two very important needs that all human beings have, that we're evolved to have as healthy human beings. And those needs are to feel that we're touched by our past, and to feel that we can reach out and touch the future. Now, our religions, our cultures are not the only ways in which we can experience these things. However, they are powerfully repositories of some of the most evolutionarily adaptive, or adapted anyhow, ways in which we can be touched by the past and touch our future. And so, again, as a non-religious person, I struggled for a while because humanism does have this heritage. There were many of the first non-theist humanists from the early part of the 20th century called themselves religious humanists. They were Unitarian ministers. They believed in humanist congregations. They called what they did religious humanism. I struggled for a little while. I said, should I call myself religious humanism? I don't. A religious humanist? I don't. It's not that much of interest to me. Call me a secular humanist if you like. Just call me a humanist if you want to do me the biggest favor. The point is, how can we address this need that people have in a way that isn't tribalism, but acknowledges our family connections. And I would argue, and I've seen it work at our New Humanism Conference and elsewhere, I've seen the way that we do have the potential, even here in North America, to say nothing of around the world for the moment, to have a diverse movement, a movement that would be representative of people from around the world, of varying cultural heritages, of varying ethnic heritages, of varying linguistic heritages, of different ages, different styles. I know we can do that. I know we can accomplish it on behalf of this scientific movement, of this Enlightenment 2.0 movement. One of the ways that I would submit that we can do it is by acknowledging that there is this split in what we commonly know as religion between the philosophical aspect of things and the culture, the heritage, the civilization that evolves around certain beliefs. And by the way, within any religious movement worth its salt, and you might say, well, no religion is worth its salt, but really within any of the religions that we commonly discuss, there's a huge diversity of different beliefs about theism. What type of theism are we talking about? Which god, which gods? But that being said, the cultural heritage aspect. So at our conference, we asked the Nobel Prize-winning philosopher economist Amartya Sen to talk, not this time about his passion for freedom or his passion for economic development, but about something that he considers to be an animating motivation for him, what drives his passion to do that work that he does. He talked about his Indian humanism, the fact that he is very much through and through a humanist, but a humanist who sees life through the lens of, along with many other things. He's a professor, an academic, he's a married man, a heterosexual who supports gay rights, et cetera, et cetera. But he is an Indian humanist, somebody who was born in India and feels very much connected to his Indian cultural roots. He talks about the fact with great pride that ancient Sanskrit, dating back almost 3,000 years to the ancient Lokayata and Charvaka schools, ancient Sanskrit has more atheist and agnostic literature than any other ancient language. So Amartya Sen, proud Indian humanist. We had the chair of our Harvard Yenching Institute, Du Wei Ming, talk about his Confucian humanism. And it's interesting because it connects, I suppose, to the talk that we had earlier in the conference about Confucianism. Now, Confucian humanism for today, what would it look like? It might look like somebody that would adopt a humanistic philosophy, this idea that we are alone here, that we are living in the one and only natural world, the only world that we have, and that we want to make this world the very best world that it can be, although we acknowledge that it will never be perfect. But combining that with the fact that his life is informed every day by his connection to his Confucian cultural heritage, thousands of years of poetry, of music, of art, of philosophy. We had a dialogue with three people. One was the novelist Salman Rushdie, who talked about the possibility of humanistic Islam and the fact that he was raised as a secular Muslim. This is his heritage. And he traces that heritage back to so many different places in the history of Islam, like the philosopher Ibn Sina, or the philosopher Ibn Rushd of the late sort of transitional period, late antiquity, the Middle Ages. That these philosophers who preserved Aristotle and ancient Greek philosophy for the Western world in Arabic. That's what Rushdie traces his heritage back to. And you know, when you go as a secular Muslim philosopher or novelist or whatever to India, you get asked, are you Indian? I mean, are you Muslim or are you Hindu? They don't let you stop and answer the question with that sort of new, well, actually, I'm an atheist, or I'm an Enlightenment 2.0 kind of guide. I got to tell you, are you a Muslim or are you a Hindu? It's a cultural question. It's a question of identity. So it was an acknowledgement of that, but also, as you know, this is Rushdie we're talking about here, also a passionate defense of humanism. And Rushdie was in dialogue with a Unitarian Universalist minister, who was also a humanist, who was talking about the fact that within a tradition like Unitarian Universalism, what do you do? Well, unfortunately, in my view, a lot of Unitarian Universalism today has become colored by the sort of supernatural belief that at least I don't feel at home with. But for many Unitarian Universalists, what you have is a where you go on a Sunday After a work week, Monday through Friday, you go on a Sunday to a beautiful space where you share an environment of music, of poetry, of singing, of talking about the important issues of the day. Then afterwards, maybe after a meal, you might go out with your family and clean up a park together, or work to stop global warming, or work to stop slavery in the Sudan, or what have you. It's a Christian culture, but it's humanism for many people. And of course, he was in dialogue with my mentor, the Rabbi Sherwin Wein, the founder of the International Movement of Humanistic Judaism, the American Humanist of the Year of 2003, who was known for a generation as the atheist rabbi, and who taught that we can combine humanism, Enlightenment humanism, Enlightenment 2.0 humanism, with that which enriches our lives as opposed to detracts from them. So that's, I really think that we need to give some thought to the ways in which we can be a little bit more diverse, we can bring a little bit more being touched by the past into our lives as we reach out and touch the future and hope that we can enlighten it. Second of all, I want to talk about how we can be a little bit more inclusive. And again, I do not mean let's all become faith and faith heads. And I don't mean that we need to be dishonest in any way, shape, or form about what we believe. I came to this conference from 3 days at an interfaith conference by an organization called the Interfaith Youth Corps. And that was an organization that they had 600 young people there from around the country, from every background. And they really welcomed us. They welcomed me as a representative of humanism and atheism. I really invite you to take part in these kinds of conferences. They wanted to know, everywhere I went, what do you believe, what don't you believe? I did a workshop with another atheist leader, and it was the best attended workshop of the conference. And they asked me about the new atheism, but I said, let's focus on two things. One, there's just as much disagreement among all of our different groups, as there is between atheism and Christianity or what have you. And two, we can acknowledge that and work together. Finally, I want to say that we have to focus some of our energy on inspiration. Not the kind that, that deals with the world of spirits, but as I've said before, humanists and atheists have done two things well in the past. We've spoken and we've debated. And that's what we're doing here, and we're doing them extremely well. But I would add, what can we do in the future also to sing and to build? I think we can build a movement together if it's not just the debating that we're doing here, and if it also involves singing. I'll end with a... No, I mean it. And just to prove the point, I'm actually going to end with a song, and a very quick song. It'll take about 30 seconds. But this is something that was written by the Rabbi Sherwin Wein. Call him Rabbi if you want in his posthumousness, or just call him Hey You. That's what he always said. It doesn't really matter whether you use the title or not. It really doesn't. The point is, he wrote this song to talk about what he believed humanism could be. It's called Aphorie, or Where Is My Light? I'll just sing you the English version. It's just a couple of lines. Where is my light? My light is in me. Where is my hope? My hope is in me. Where is my strength? My strength is in me. And in you, and in you. Where is my strength? My strength is in me, and in you. And in you.